Hello, and welcome to episode 88 of the Reconomy podcast, where we discuss economic issues that impact real estate, housing, and affordability. I am Odetta Kushi, Deputy Chief Economist at First American, and here with me is Mark Fleming, Chief Economist at First American. Hey, Mark. Housing economists, us very much included, talk a lot about the housing supply shortage.
Hi, Odetta. Indeed we do. And we've been talking about it for about a decade now. One might say we sound like broken records at this point.
I think we do. And while there are many different ways to measure the shortage and the total number of units we are short can vary based on methodology and assumptions, the industry is in agreement that the shortage is real and the imbalance of supply relative to demand has contributed to higher house prices.
Rare as this is, economists actually do agree. Sometimes. And this time, if we had to put a number to it, what would you say is industry consensus regarding the size of the shortage?
So we look at many different industry estimates, and it seems the average estimate is about 3 million units of housing under supply. Now, currently, there are about 1.7 million housing units under construction. That's apartments and homes. So if all those units came to market tomorrow, ready to sell or lease, and there was no new household formation, second home sales, or destruction of homes, then that's still only a bit more than half of what's needed to meet the consensus shortage.
But the undersupply isn't static. We have to also take into account household growth. And according to an analysis from the Harvard Joint Center for Housing Studies, annual household growth between 2019 and 2021 averaged 2 million and 2.4 million per year. Right, so a lot more. That's elevated compared to the household growth average in 2017 to 2019 of 1.4 to 1.5 million per year. But let's just say that we have 1 million new households next year. That means we need to build at least 1 million more units in a year just to keep up with the new demand for shelter, let alone whittle down that undersupply.
Now you're just being a dismal scientist. But of course, we know that all real estate is local, so this shortfall varies considerably by market. But I guess the bigger question is, what can we do about it?
Well, there are a lot of suggestions having to do with zoning regulations and generally making it less costly and easier to build, sort of doing away with the NIMBYism and more of the YIMBYism. But there is no silver bullet solution, nor actually probably just one solution for America's housing supply shortage.
So that's why in today's episode, we'll cover one potential solution to building more affordable housing, and that is manufactured housing.
Yes. Manufactured housing is a type of prefabricated housing that is largely assembled in factories and transported to sites of use. And while often called mobile homes, I don't think that's a fair characterization, but we will get to that in a minute.
You know, my mind immediately goes to the kit homes from Sears, Roebuck & Company that were popular in the 1920s. Actually, some of these homes still exist in my neighborhood in D.C.
I would imagine in other neighborhoods in old cities like Chicago and Philadelphia and others as well. I suppose we could think of this as the OG of manufactured housing.
I guess so.
Okay, that one didn't go well. The manufactured housing of today is a lot more impressive. It's also an affordable solution to the housing shortage. A Fannie Mae study found that the median all-in monthly housing cost of $925 per month for manufactured homeowners was $675 per month less than that paid by owners of site-built homes. That's a savings of 43%.
Yeah, that's pretty massive. And yet another study found that, so quote, when structure, transport, installation, land, and site development costs are included, the total purchase price of a manufactured home might be as much as 75% less than the cost of a traditional home of comparable size and quality, end quote.
Voila! Affordability problem solved then. We must be building lots of these, right?
Well, not so much. When we compare new manufactured homes and new single-family site-built homes, we find that in 2023, site-built homes made up 91% of the market, with manufactured housing making up 9%.
Okay, so not that much, and unfortunately, even less than before, since we love going back in time. From 1975 to the late 1990s, the manufactured housing share of new single-family production averaged about 20%. And we were building more new homes in general then, too, so a larger share of a larger total in the days of old.
And if we look at data from 2022, we find that the average price per square foot for a new manufactured home was about $88, while for site-built homes, it was $168. This is excluding land. And if you're wondering if perhaps the quality of a manufactured home isn't the same, a study found that the life expectancy of factory-built housing is increasingly comparable to that of site-built or on-site housing. But what about the look of it? I mean, you said mobile homes earlier.
Mobile homes. Well, I sort of have a mobile home picture in my mind's eye here, but I suspect that I am falling prey to a bias or two.
Indeed, you are. The Manufactured Housing Institute recently conducted a consumer survey to capture consumer sentiment about manufactured housing, and I'm just going to go over some of the highlights. Overall, 81% of manufactured homeowners report a very positive or positive overall feeling about their home. 71% report that they're extremely or very satisfied with their home. And a strong majority of manufactured homeowners, about 72%, said that they're likely to recommend manufactured homes to others. And when they looked at demographics, because they did this similar study in 2018, they found that residents' demographics are now younger with kids and more upscale, so higher income, more educated, more employed, and less rural.
And they also profiled potential buyers of manufactured home, which tended to be younger and are not only attracted to the affordability of manufactured housing, but also features such as energy efficiency and natural light. This doesn't sound like the mobile home in my mind.
No, very different, I think. So essentially, we have a housing shortage, and manufactured housing is a cheaper, durable, aesthetically pleasing option, and people generally seem happy with it. So the question then is, why don't we have more of it?
That is the great question, and there are a few reasons, but let's start with local zoning. A 2018 study by the Urban Institute found that zoning restrictions impede the use of manufactured homes as an affordable housing tool in urban and suburban areas, and may help explain why a disproportionate amount of manufactured housing is in rural and unincorporated areas. 49% of units are located outside a metropolitan statistical area versus 22% of all single-family detached housing units. In other words, manufactured housing is in the exurbs and the rural America, not urban America.
Not to mention that some localities have an outright ban on manufactured homes or require that they be placed on larger lots than site-built homes. And there are other practices, such as imposing site-built construction standards to these manufactured homes, also called HUD code homes. So for definition purposes, a HUD code home refers to manufactured homes that comply with the safety and construction standards set by the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, or HUD.
A national construction standard, that is something that cannot be said for site-built homes. And even setting appraised value requirements that a manufactured home must meet before it can be sited in the locality. This exclusionary list goes on, but the point is that local jurisdictions adopt land planning ordinances and utilize code enforcement that excludes manufactured housing.
And unfortunately, that's not the only hurdle. I think we should talk about the chassis requirement. A chassis is a load-bearing framework of a manufactured object. There is a current requirement that a manufactured home be built on a permanent chassis. That is a very old requirement, and it is reflective of a time when manufactured housing was a trailer home, or at least the chassis under the home was the trailer used to transport it.
That's right, but these days, manufactured homes are essentially indistinguishable from site-built homes once placed in the land. The chassis is still required for transportation, but the idea that the home is mobile, I think, is not the case. Manufactured homes are rarely moved after they are sited.
So what's the problem with this requirement?
Well, first, it certainly doesn't help with the stigma or perception of manufactured housing. You still have this chassis underneath, although you probably can't see it when they're sited properly. But there's an assumption that homes on chassis are lower in quality than site-built homes, and this requirement doesn't allow for innovative designs that remove the chassis. So there are some design limitations if it's still there.
There's also a financing consideration here. If the land is leased to the manufactured home buyer, then it's classified as personal property or chattel rather than real property, which is land and manufactured home owned by the buyer. About 77% of new manufactured home are titled as chattel.
That's right. Chattel mortgages are harder to obtain due to this type of loan not being offered by many lenders. It's basically not including land and structure, which is more typical for site-built and existing homes. Chattel loans tend to have lower balances, shorter terms, 10, 15, or at most maybe 20 years, higher interest rates, and have fewer underwriting requirements than their mortgage counterparts. The borrower may face higher monthly payments due to a shorter loan term.
So a potential lack of financing is another hurdle. So far, we've got negative perceptions of manufactured housing quality.
But I think we busted that myth with some of the survey data responses earlier.
That's right. Then we've got restrictive zoning and land use regulations. And I'm going to point to another study here from the Harvard Joint Center for Housing Studies that points out that while state laws preventing the outright exclusion of manufactured housing is helpful in some instances, these laws don't address the design restrictions that are also important barriers, such as lot size restrictions, which I mentioned earlier.
That's right. And then you've got access to mortgage financing, or rather the lack thereof, and the chassis requirement.
So these obstacles are really important to address because that same Joint Center for Housing Studies research found that there are 3.2 million renters earning between 50 and 100% of area median incomes in counties across the country who would have difficulty affording a site-built home, but who could benefit from the lower cost of a manufactured home.
Well, it seems to me one thing is for sure. The U.S. housing market faces a housing availability and affordability crisis. And manufactured housing seems to be one good solution among the many.
I think that's a pretty good place to close out the episode.
Wait. How can we get through an episode without an 80s music reference? And listeners, you would never imagine what I found. Did you know that there is an 80s Swedish rock band called, wait for it, The Mobile Homes? Seriously, how can we pass up that bit of 80s trivia?
Someone get Mark to an 80s trivia night or something. I mean, I think he would do really well. All right, now I think we really need to end this episode. Thank you, everyone, for joining us on this episode of the Rural Economy Podcast. If you have an economics-related question you'd like us to feature in the future, you can email us at economics@firstam.com. And as always, if you can't wait for the next episode, you can follow us on X. It's at Odetta Kushi for me and at M. Fleming Econ for Mark. Until next time.
Thank you for listening, and we hope you enjoyed this episode of the Reconomy Podcast from First American. We're pleased to offer you even more economic content at firstam.com/economics. This episode is copyright 2024 by First American Financial Corporation. All rights reserved.